We want the nuke, and we want Sunchild. We also want to find Cyclops Jr., dead or alive. We take him back no matter what. Agreed?
The last was directed at Ryan. Harvey was eyeing him carefully as he spoke the word, searching for the slightest sign of reaction. Ryan remained stony-faced, controlling the emotions that ran through him, knowing that the Sec Chief was looking for a hint of weakness. Ryan was sure that Dean wasn't in the valley, but he was still his son, and the thought of him chilled like the children they had recovered previously made him shudder inside. But not outwardly. Harvey turned away, dissatisfied by the lack of reaction.
When we've secured that objective, we trash the place. Completely. For once and for all, we rid ourselves of the muty scum, no offense, Whitey, and drive them out. If possible, we chill them all, every last one.
Alien looked uncomfortable.
Are you certain about that? We have never in Raw acted in such a manner.
Baron, you want them to escalate, get more and more trouble? If so, then fine, but you put me in charge a sec, and I say we ice the fuckers once and for all.
Very well.
Ryan felt JB's hand on his arm and his breath in his ear.
What's the idea, Ryan? The longer we stay around, the more of us stand to buy the farm. Or is that the idea?
Maybe, and maybe not just Alien. Triple Red, JB. That Coldite may just decide to chill us at the same time.
The one-eyed warrior felt, rather than saw, the ascent from the armorer as he melted into the crowd to spread the word to Mildred, Jack, and Doc. Christy had been close enough to hear.
Okay, let's get to it.
The flame-haired woman lightly kissed Ryan on the cheek. It was only a cover for her to be able to whisper in his ear.
Be careful. Dean's not here, and we've got to get back to find him.
The RPKs were set up on each side, the drum-mounted ammo in place. On their respective sides, Ant and Dee both secured the tripods and left the two armorers seated with the blasters at the requisite angle. The two dreadlock Sekmen then both moved away as one after the final check, readying their shotguns and checking their wrist fronds. Around them, stretching in a thin line around the lip of the valley, the war party readied their own weapons. On opposite sides of the valley, the dreadlocked Sekmen again checked their wrist fronds. As one, they turned to the armorers seated behind the RPKs.
No!
The firing began in short, controlled bursts, the twin machine blasters rending the air with tracer fire and peals of noise, louder for the quiet that had preceded it. As JB had pointed out when questioned earlier on the blasters, they were capable of 660 rounds per minute, but to fire at such a pace would heat up the barrel to such a degree that it would ignite the ammo left in the drum and set the blaster on a rapid and uncontrollable fire. So, each armorer kept her firing for short bursts, firing off 50 or 60 rounds, while pausing and counting to 10, then another 50 or 60. The barrels of the RPKs were soon red-hot, but not the white-hot that would ignite the drum. The pauses were enough to keep the barrel just beneath that crucial temperature. The tripods were raised at an angle that would keep the fire going over the heads of the war party as it descended the steep slopes that formed three sides of the Valley of Sandvogel. The majority of the ammo would land toward the center of the ville, where the majority of the men were clustered. The outlying areas were where the women and the children were sequestered in their tents and shacks. Some of the shells cannoned into the faded and peeling stucco of the ranch houses, chipping off plaster that raised choking dust in the smoky light. As he scrambled down the side of the valley, Ryan could see that the muties gathered in the center of the ville were thrown into confusion by the sudden attack. Some of them gathered around Sunchild in an attempt to shield him, but the muty leader roared and directed them away. Some of them disappeared into one of the ranch houses, and Ryan guessed that that was where they kept their small armory. They had already proved themselves next to useless in a firefight, but nonetheless it could prove a problem in close quarters, where a stray blast could go anywhere. As he reached the bottom of the incline, he was pulled up short by the figure of a muty looming up at him out of the semi-darkness. There were fewer fires at the edges of the ville, and longer and deeper pools of shadow. This was the danger zone, as the invaders were still descending and could be caught easily as they reached the valley floor. The one-eyed warrior was ready for this. Although the Sig Sauer was in his hand, he couldn't rely on finding much time and space to reload, so was unwilling to waste ammo. As his combat boots thudded on the dirt floor, his hand snaked down his thigh and withdrew the panga. The muty was screaming wordlessly, a high note of fear mixed in with the savagery. As the misshapen creature approached, Ryan could see that it was a woman, the pendulous and wrinkled breasts riding free of the stained and patched dyed robes that she wore. She had only half a face, the majority of her lower jaw and one side of her cheek a mass of scar tissue and welts. She was virtually bald, and her toothless mouth was open in the scream, strings of drool running between her lips. Her eyes were lit by hate, fear, and a light of pure insanity. She was brandishing a large, scythe-shaped blade that had a small wooden handle. The blade, even in the poor light, seemed to be stained and pitted with something that was probably blood. Ryan had no intention of letting his own blood be added to that which had dried on the blade. He held the panga in front of him, across his body, waiting for the optimum moment. The mutie approached him in an open stance. She was shuffling rather than running, which slowed her enough for him to relax into the move rather than hurry it, for she was holding the blade above her head, ready to bring it down in a sweep. This left the right-hand side of her body completely exposed to attack, the line down her arm and ribs undefended from any blow that may be struck. Ryan stepped forward, ducking under the blow as her arm fell uselessly past his shoulder, the scything blade hacking at empty air. At the same time, he brought his own blade across and up, so that he sliced beneath the ribs, carving open the soft flesh and spilling the mutie's intestines into the dirt with a sloshing sound and a rise of steam as the warm flesh and blood hit the cold night air. The blade continued its upward thrust, carving into vital organs before being withdrawn as Ryan stepped back. The mutie woman stood for a moment, a bewildered light in her eyes. Then the light died, and she tumbled forward onto the ground at Ryan's feet. Jake, the huge bear-like Sek man, roared loudly and had a bloodlust in his eyes. Like the berserkers of Viking legend, he had put himself into a frenzied state, where he was little more than a killing machine, which was exactly what Harvey wanted from him. The Sek chief had seen Jake in this state before, and had spent no little part of the journey persuading the Sek man that he should adopt this persona for the raid. The bear-like, grizzled fighter had taken little persuading, and had spent the few minutes at the top of the valley, waiting for the signal of covering fire, to put himself into that state where he saw only fresh meat for the chilling. And now he was in full cry, a deep-throated roar escaping him, barely registering the sweeping knives and rough-hewed blades of the muties as they attempted to stop him. He had discarded his H&K blaster in favor of two long samurai-type swords, the strangely shaped blades arcing through the air before him in a complex pattern, sweeping and crossing in a way that prevented the mutie sun children from getting too close. There were a few random stabs that penetrated his defenses, and the jagged edges of blades that cut and marked him, streams of blood ribboning down his chest and back. He seemed not to register them, except that it spurred him to greater savagery. The flashing blades cut through soft, mutie flesh, hacked at jagged bone, with barely a pause.
Dark night. Could have sent that big bastard in on his own.
Downey snapped off another round from the sharps, scoring cleanly through the forehead of a passing mutie. The mutie staggered on for a few steps, not seeming to realize she was dead, before crumpling into a heap.
Be fair. You don't want him to have all the fun, do you?
Fun?
The armorer rattled off another short blast from the Uzi to a group of muties emerging from one of the ranch houses. He and Downey had both gravitated toward covering the ranch houses, the two of them assuming that any blasters the Sun Children had would best be stopped as soon as they came out of what passed for an armory, rather than let loose as a random factor into the firefight, except that it was much more of a night chill than a firefight. JB had descended the eastern slope of the valley almost on his butt, sliding down through a cloud of dust and feeling the rough earth tearing at his fatigues. It didn't matter if he ripped some skin on the way down. He was going to use the M4000 to maximum effect, and it was necessary to arrive as quickly as possible. Hitting bottom at a run, the armorer had headed for his self-appointed task, the ranch house armory. There was still confusion as he sprinted through a crowd of mutie sun children, using the techno knife to carve a path. The blade was razor sharp, the muties keen to avoid it. He was relying on the element of surprise and the fact that others were following to cover his back on the outer fringes. But now he was coming into the main area of light, lamps and fires making the central arena of Zomkogel seem almost in daylight. There was a clutch of muties around the ranch house, blocking his way. Without breaking stride, JB sheathed the knife and brought up the M4000, which he'd been cradling in his left arm, so that he grasped it with both hands. He stopped for a moment, planting both feet firmly to take the recoil, and fired the charge of barbed metal flechettes into the packed group of sun children, who were too bewildered by this sudden apparition to move. The white-hot metal shot at enormous velocity and spreading over a wide area as it left the confines of the barrel brought death and pain to the group, which disintegrated suddenly into a mass of writhing, blood-stained flesh. Some of the muties at the front of the group took the full brunt, their faces in